Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real-life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is March the 27th, 2014. Yes, we're almost at the end of the month. It's amazing how these days go by so quickly. And you're just tuning in to another episode with The Bright Side with Technisha. Today is, it's still a little cold today, but don't worry, the summer will come. So, and I just want to let everybody know, remain comfortable in your own skin. Don't wait till summer to want to just get all fit and buff. Honey, be comfortable with who you are. I was looking at Facebook, and you know everybody want to prep up. Oh, summer gets here now. You know when the heat starts. Don't everybody start complaining, talking about it's too hot. So to be careful what you ask for. But anyhow, I appreciate everybody's love. Yesterday on my Facebook fan page and on my regular Facebook, for giving me love and concern for my husband. His back is still hurting him, so today we're going to go get his medicine, and hopefully that will work. If not, we're going to have to get x-rays, so just keep this in your prayers. And, of course, your host is a little under weather. I have a cold, so, hey, couldn't get any better than this. But today on my show, I have Cal Davis. He is qualified as a charter psychologist following completion of a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology and a Master of Philosophy degree in applied psychology. He practiced for 10 years as a psychologist and management consultant. So let's give a warm welcome to Cal Davis. Keep your ears and your eyes open. How are you today, Cal?
I'm very good, thank you, Technisha. Thank you very much for having me on the show. I'm really excited to be here. And thanks for reading out my bio there. It makes me sound really posh, doesn't it?
I know, and I'm ready, and I know that before the show began, you said that we gonna probably be discussing things that can, that's in regards to my husband back being in pain at the moment, and I do appreciate you for being so concerned about that as well. So, Cal, thank you for your love and support, too.
It's an absolute pleasure.
So, Cal, give us a little detail about your background.
Okay, I embellish a bit on what you said, I spent 5 years at university doing psychology of one sort or another. I came out of that, I did a bit of counselling, and then I moved into management consulting where I worked on a whole range of things really. A lot of the work I was doing was executive coaching and counselling and training managers and that sort of thing. But I was really, one of the things that really fascinated me was that when people are often in the workplace, and certainly the work I was doing in coaching people in the workplace, I found that they would continue to kind of wear the mask of the manager or be in that role of the executive. And there was a part of me that really wanted to try to make big shifts and understand the person, to get deeper into who that person was. I think part of that is because I've always been quite a spiritual person. I wanted to really kind of dig deep. So I then went and did a whole load of therapy type training. I did psychotherapy, hypnotherapy. I did the tapping therapies, NLP. I did loads of stuff. And then I started working I had a small clinic, and I was working with people with stress-related conditions and anxiety and depression. And then about 10 years ago, I got involved with a doctor who was working with conditions like chronic fatigue syndrome, post-viral fatigue, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, but all of those conditions that present themselves as physical symptoms, but medicine, conventional medicine, doesn't have an explanation as to why those symptoms present themselves. So they were called, certainly back in those days, were called either medically unexplained symptoms or functional somatic symptoms and syndromes. And at the time, we were hugely excited because we found a therapeutic process that would help people with these conditions. And up to that point, you know, when people were suffering from these sorts of symptoms, these sorts of medically unexplained symptoms, the best that medicine could offer was something to try to just deal with their symptoms without actually dealing with the cause of why the symptoms were there. So people would have things like painkillers or sleeping tablets or antidepressants. And, you know, what we believed we'd found, really, was the reason behind why the symptoms were there. We believed we'd found the cause of the symptoms, and our therapy was working and was helping people get their health back. So it was a hugely exciting time. And, you know, if you like, I can go in and talk about, you know, what we believe the cause was and all the rest of it. So that was about 10 years ago when that started, and that sort of developed and evolved. And as I say, being a sort of spiritual person and always looking for, always looking to kind of move my work on and develop my work, I felt that more of a metaphysical aspect was needed in my work, in my treatment. So a couple of years ago, I split apart from my old business partner, and I started to, again, working with the same sort of conditions, stress-related conditions and anxiety and depression, and all of the medically unexplained symptoms and syndromes of chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. But I've gone back into my business roots as well a bit, and I do executive coaching, I do personal mentoring. But I guess the sort of essence of my approach is that we're kind of vibrational, energetic beings, and that in order for us to really experience health and wellness and vitality and happiness and fulfillment, our energy needs to be balanced, it needs to flow. And our frequency and vibration need to be kind of aligned and coherent. So this is, it's almost like a balancing of heart and head. It's a balancing of the soul part of us and the human part of us. So that's kind of my approach. I think what we find these days, certainly in Western culture, is that lots of people entertain a very materialistic worldview. So it's sort of the assumption that comes out of science, really, that the world and universe is made of material and moving parts, you know, a bit like a machine. And there's nothing else that exists. Everything is matter. Everything is material. And this kind of view suggests that humans are kind of just machines or robots, kind of devoid of free will or of consciousness as such. And in this view, the idea of consciousness is sort of overlooked, or it's viewed as a byproduct of brain functioning. And then when it comes to health, I think, you know, the way medicine seems to treat people a little bit is that we are kind of machines, and therefore symptoms need to be treated in isolation. And despite all the many, many wonderful things about mainstream, it does have this focus on treating symptoms. I actually think that a lot of alternative approaches do that as well, but that kind of makes people pretty passive in relation to their health and fulfillment. So I guess my approach is very much about empowerment. I have this real passionate belief that people have the ability to take control of themselves, take control of their health, take control of their wellness, their vitality, and their fulfillment. But I think what happens is that an awful lot of us have just kind of got a bit lost, really. And this is why we're sort of experiencing an absolute kind of epidemic of chronic health problems, really. So I think that people are not given the knowledge and the tools that they need. I'm sort of talking on here, Technisha. Shall I break there and let you ask me something?
Well, I know everybody had to get a look. Well, they definitely know Cal Davis in their home. So, Cal, what all these so many therapies out here? These, what made you look into other alternatives for therapy?
I guess I've in terms of the work that I do, I've always been interested in what works. I've always been a very, and that came through when I was working as a psychologist in management consulting. It was the focus was a very pragmatic approach. Let's find out what works and let's kind of do it. I suppose coming from a background of psychology and that being my training, I guess I was probably always going to follow that path. So it just felt, you know, that line of the types of therapies that I've done and the types of therapies that I've evolved, I guess have been born out of that foundation. So, you know, whilst there are some fantastic things with nutrition and supplements and whatnot, that hasn't been my calling. But I think as well there's a place for everything out there, and I think that what feels right, what really works for one person, doesn't necessarily work as well for the next person. So I think it's important that we have a variety of health practitioners, a variety of health and wellness related ideas, so that people can really trust themselves and feel pulled to whatever might work for them.
Now, with most of your practices, people come to you, they talk about the relationships, depression, or so what, but you always bring quantum physics into it. Tell me how that goes about working.
I guess it's a quasi approach to quantum physics. It's this idea that we are energy. It's this idea that we are more than we see in the mirror. We are vibrational beings of energy, and I think that my empowerment view spills over into the idea that we do play a large part in the creation of our own experience, and what science tells us is that our brain and our hearts create electric and magnetic fields. And the electric and magnetic fields created by the heart are significantly bigger and more powerful than the electric and magnetic fields created by the brain. So what we have is that, our feelings seem to primarily run through our heart center. You know, this is the way we talk about it, isn't it? This is how I feel in my heart. You know, and we know that as well, that science tells us that we have neurons in our digestive system, in our gut. We have neurons in our heart as well as in our brain. So the heart creates this big energy field that extends out into the space around us. And then when that energy field interacts with the energy fields of everything else in life, the shift in vibration causes physiological changes within the body, and that often starts with the heart. So I guess that's the idea of it, is that there are energetic things that I think as well, you know, when it comes to the quantum ideas, there are subtle energies that maybe we don't, you know, we don't quite understand. We haven't quite measured yet. But, you know, more awareness is, and more learning and more understanding is coming of these ideas about energy and energy fields and how we affect each other. But most people have had that experience of going into a party. And just as, you know, even as you're approaching the house, sometimes if it's a house party or the venue, you can feel the atmosphere. As soon as you walk in the door, you can often feel whether there's a good energy, a great atmosphere, or whether it's kind of low and quiet. And that's not necessarily your five senses that are detecting that. That's often something that goes beyond the five senses. And I think that's the quantum part of it, really, is that there is this energy, and it's we don't quite know what it is, but it exists beyond our five sense reality. And as well, because our heart is radiating this, radiating energy fields, and creating energy fields, and this is affected by our feeling states. So how we feel about ourselves, how we feel about life, is radiated out. So we become sort of like transmitters of energy as well as receivers of energy. So we feel other people's energy, and we feel the energy of situations, and we can feel when things go on around us. But we're also transmitting. And I think that life all around us is it reacts to energy. So that as we resonate at a certain frequency, the frequency that we put out seems to come back to us. So it seems that the way we feel affects the energy fields that our heart creates, that it's transmitted out. And then these vibrations, kind of almost like when you tune into a radio, when we're vibrating at a certain frequency, other things that are of that frequency come into our experience. And I think this is why people often experience the same things over and over again in their lives. You know, I've had loads of clients over the years that have said to me things like, "God, I always seem to attract the same kind of guys into my life," or "I always have a boss that treats me like this," or "my friends always do this to me." And I think that what's happening there is that those people are radiating feelings, and they're radiating feelings about themselves, and it's expectations and it's beliefs, and these things manifest themselves in vibrational frequencies, and they're radiated out. And what life does is it reflects back like a huge mirror those things that we send out. So I guess that's where the old cliche of life is a self-fulfilling prophecy comes from. It's that idea that it's kind of what you expect to happen does happen, but it's not what you think will happen, it's what you almost like unconsciously feel, because it's your heart that's radiating the biggest field. It's not your thinking brain. I know there's there's an awful lot of people out there think that it's all about what you think. So I've got to think good thoughts, I've got to think positive thoughts. And of course we've had a huge industry which has been based on that idea that, you know, change your thinking, change your life. But I think the new evidence is beginning to show that whilst what you think is kind of value, actually your heart and what you feel is more important. Because when it comes to the emotions that we feel, emotion is triggered initially independently of the thinking brain. So I know an awful lot of people tend to think that, well, emotion is something that takes place in my head, I think some thoughts, and then I have some emotion. But actually what science is beginning to tell us now is that as our heart field interacts with life, the shift in frequency affects the heart. The heart then communicates with the non-thinking part of the brain, the midbrain or the emotional brain, and our digestive system. And then emotion floods throughout the body. And then at that point, the thinking brain becomes active when we start to think. So our thinking is actually affected by our emotion. So if you're a person and you have lots of negative thoughts, it's probably because your body is producing lots of negative emotions. So rather than trying dealing with the negative thoughts, it's better to pay attention to what the emotions might be, because of course those feelings and emotions are what you're going to be radiating out. So that's probably what's going to be reflected back into you in life as well. I'm going on a bit again, aren't I now?
But you know, to me, as you were saying about the heart and thought process, of course, to me, it's typical in our society to feel this conflict between what we want to do, which is our heart, and what we feel is practical, which is our mind, and we end up living one-third of our lives in a cubicle for these benefits. We stay around people who we only kind of like. We do or say things just to fit in and seem cool. Do you think these feelings just become silly, or maybe it's just our mind that's to blame?
I think it's a really good question, really. I think you're absolutely right. I think we do, we often are doing things to fit in. We're often doing things to be accepted. We're often doing things to try to look cool. And I guess what, you know, this is interesting now, because this, I guess, comes on to the essence of what my work is about, is because we all do that to a certain degree. There is, you know, I believe there's a core part of us. There's a core energy, if you will. There's a core vibration, a core frequency that is us. And as I kind of believe, that's almost like our soul. And then as we go through life, as we have experiences, as you know, we want to belong, we want to fit in, we want to be loved, we tend to become conditioned, and that conditioning kind of sticks in our mind. So exactly as you say, you've got the sort of the conditioned mind often pulls us in one direction, and our heart, or soul almost, is trying to pull it in a different direction. Now, I find that what my belief is that, you know, ideally what we want is for those two things to be aligned, so that you feel, you let yourself feel what's in your heart and what's in your soul, and you kind of allow yourself really to be guided or governed by that. And your thinking brain really just tries to figure out the best way of putting what your heart wants into action. Problems occur, though, when the conditioned mind begins to rule the roost. So when the conditioned mind becomes the boss, and the way we act and the way we think is more a result of our conditioning than who we really are, and who we really are being that kind of heart-soul part of us. So I think what happens is that when when there's a big gap between who a person really is, the heart and soul bit of them, and how they act, and, you know, being the conditioned mind bit, when there's a big gap, I think that's when people begin to experience problems in life. And I think those problems range all the way from feeling a bit stuck, feeling stressed, maybe feeling a bit confused or lost, all the way through to having symptoms of, could be anxiety, it could be depression, or it could be any of these other physical symptoms that I deal with, be it anything from fatigue, pain, stomach and bowel problems, insomnia, skin conditions. So there's a whole host of symptoms that manifest themselves. And I guess I do have a reasonably sort of simplistic view on it. It is that when we deviate from who we are, if we deviate too far from who we really are, then we experience symptoms. And it's almost as if what happens is that there's a core part of us that is trying to tell us that there's something wrong. And I think this is what it does through symptoms of ill health.
Since we have explained that, I would love to talk about, like, the connection between metaphysics, the spirituality, and health.
Well, I think it's a good question, that metaphysics, spirituality, and health. Where does it all connect? For me, it connects with this idea that, if I continue going from what I was just talking about, of if the conditioned mind, that human mind part of us, becomes the boss and we become detached from our soul, then I believe that's when we experience symptoms. Because what happens is that tension and stress build up within the body. There is a build-up of negative emotions, and negative emotions are a complex physiological process. As I was saying, you know, it's an interaction between the heart and the non-thinking part of the brain and the gut. Now, you know, I believe, to really go spiritual, and I believe we are spiritual beings having the experience of being human. So I believe that I'm more than I see in the mirror. So that helps me to kind of connect with the core of who I am, which I believe is soul. It's funny because when I was brought up and raised as Christian, And I guess I've become more spiritual, really, rather than religious in recent years. But when I sort of got back into my calling of being spiritual, I it was interesting at the time because there seemed to be this idea that, God, it's really tough being human trying to be spiritual. And there was something that sort of didn't feel quite right for me about that idea. And then I came across this idea that, well, we're spiritual beings playing the game of being human. And that really rang true for me because I'd always thought life could seem a bit strange. It can seem a bit brutal at times. So this idea that actually what I'm doing is playing a game at being human. I'm spiritual in my essence, in my core. And really what I'm doing is wearing a spacesuit, which is my body, and I'm walking around having this experience. So then the connection with health is that I believe that our soul craves experience and expression. And I think that, you know, we often hear this cliche. I know we do, certainly in the UK. Often people will talk about the idea of going traveling to find themselves. And I think the idea of that is what they're trying to do. They're trying to find their soul. They're trying to find out who they really are. And of course, what they do is they go through different experiences and they have a sense of how they feel and then how they behave and how they perceive. And that's the soul experiencing itself, because I think that's kind of the purpose of life is that we come in as a spiritual being, we have a soul, and the soul wants to have experience. And I think what happens is that, you know, I kind of believe that when the soul comes in, it sort of has life lessons. You know, we come in, we want expression, we want experience, and we have these life lessons. And I think our life lessons are kind of mapped onto or wired into our energy. And I think this affects the sorts of situations that we seem to find ourselves in, the sorts of situations that we attract in our lives. It's, you know, just going back to what I was saying earlier about the energy that we radiate affects what we attract back to us. I think that's the same. I think a path that plays into that is our life lessons, and I think that's part of the reason why, certainly in my coaching and therapy practice, I see people that will say to me that, you know, history does repeat itself and they experience the same things over and over. So I think that's a big part, that the soul kind of wants to learn lessons, and there's something in every situation. And I think that often I find that, you know, we go through life, and life is pretty tough. You know, it can be deeply uncomfortable at times, and it can seem crazy, and we don't know why certain things happen. But I think, for me, a crucial spiritual piece is that there's something in every situation for us. There's something in every interaction for us. But if we judge it, if we resist it, then we prevent ourselves from integrating the learning that we could be deriving from it. So the thing that I do with my clients is that, you know, as we go through a process of, you know, if it's coaching, it's helping them transform their lives and get and experience more of what they want. If it's somebody in the therapy context, it's helping them get over symptoms. But a core piece is that spiritual aspect of, it's important that we let go of the resistance. It's important that we let go of the judgment and recognize that even though to the human part of us, a situation can be deeply uncomfortable, or an interaction with a person can be deeply uncomfortable, there is learning in there. There's something in there for us. There's something that's there for us to take from it. And even if we can't see it immediately, even if we don't know what it is, I think just being open to the fact there is learning there opens up a whole series of doors for us. It enables us to walk a path that otherwise we wouldn't be able to, and that's the kind of empowerment path where we begin to take control of our lives. And I think that's the that's the important bit. It's the being, it's the recognition that there's something here for me. I can learn from this. My soul can learn from this, and that I guess that's the essence of the spiritual journey.
Yes, and it's a journey that's hard for people to actually experience, because most people don't want to sometimes believe in the spirituality of things, but I find it amazing when you can actually connect with something that's greater than you. And I love the metaphysics of things it's all about connection to me. And as far as it goes, metaphysics has a long history as well. And I think this is like since the dawn of time, mankind has sought a way to interact with the spirits and God. And this was done through ceremonies, what's the other one, shaman activities and spiritual healing. So I think it just makes us aware of the way the world actually changes.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think that, you know, as you mentioned there, there's another piece of from quantum theory that actually we are all connected, we are all one. And even though we appear to be separate, we are all connected. And of course, that's deeply spiritual as well. It's that idea that we are all connected to infinite consciousness. All that is, all that ever will be, is in us. We're part of it. But what we experience in our human form is this sense of separateness, which again is kind of weird. But going back to your other point, which I think it's a really valid point, it's a really interesting point, that a lot of the time people can have a difficulty accepting some of the spiritual ideas. My take, certainly in the work that I do, is that even if you're not a spiritual person, it's actually a much more healthy, it's a much more empowering way of viewing life to have a sense that there's something I can learn from this particular situation. There's something I can do about it. There's some way I can transform my life. There's some way I can create change in my life. And by looking at interactions with people, by looking at situations as serving me rather than cursing me, I think, you know, that shift in and of itself, even if you're not a spiritual person, I think it's incredibly empowering, because ultimately that's what people want, isn't it? To have the knowledge and tools to be able to take charge of their lives, to be able to create the sorts of lives that they want to experience. I don't, you know, I obviously, like you, we're curious about the metaphysical and spiritual nature of life, but I don't think you have to have an intellectual curiosity about that to allow yourself to live a spiritual life, because ultimately I think the living the spiritual life is being connected to yourself, and it's a removal of judgment, a practicing of acceptance and these sorts of things. But I, you know, again, I think you touched on it. What we are witnessing at the moment is, certainly what I'm witnessing, is something of a consciousness shift. I know we had all the kind of excitement about 2012, but I really feel that's, you know, really is the start of a, it's maybe the midpoint of a major shift. I'm seeing more and more people, both in my practice and socially, who are either waking up spiritually and expressing a desire to know more, a desire to understand more, questioning, you know, who are we? What are we doing here? What is it all about? You know, I want more than, you know, just the next job promotion or a bigger car. You know, there's something more to life than this. So, I mean, there's a lot of people like that, but there's also a lot of people experiencing discomfort, you know, feeling stuck, feeling lost. Huge numbers of people experiencing stress and anxiety and depression, and certainly in the US, the numbers of people on prescription medication is huge for depression and anxiety. And I think these conditions are really a result of of a blocking of the energy of who we are, and a blocking of our emotion. And you know, the result of that is dysfunction within our body systems. And of course, what we're doing with medicine is we're trying to treat the symptoms rather than deal with the underlying cause of it. And you don't have to be spiritual to address the cause of it. I think it helps a bit, but you know, I don't think you have to be. But it's a blockage and imbalance of the energy of who we are, the emotion that is produced as a result of the vibration of who we are. If that all makes sense.
It does. It makes perfect sense, and I totally 100% agree with you. And I feel like sometimes we're actually sleepwalking when we're thinking about all the spiritual and philosophical traditions of the world, but when we actually wake up, we're enlightened. And that's what gets me, where we experience this world for what it truly is. And that brings me to the point of, why do you think conscious living is important? Because I know all of us species, we possess this, and it's actually needed for survival. But why is it really truly important, Cal?
I think, you know, it's just linking to that point you said. I think that with our modern lives are just so hectic, aren't they? People are, you know, rushing from one thing to the next. Be it. If you're a student at college, or if you're at work, there's so many things that need to be done, and there's bills that need to be paid, and I think that we're absolutely and utterly bombarded with data as well. We've got our cell phones, we've got TV screens, we've got radio. Well, we're on radio now, you know. But we're constantly bombarded with data. Our senses are overloaded. And I think the result of all this is that we do slip into a trance-like state. And, you know, I think that we become locked in our thinking brain, but almost in this unconscious, you know, haze. I think, you know, we're very often like hamsters on a wheel. We're all in debt, and we're all kind of worried. We're worried about the future. We're worried about the past. And I think the result of this is that we become really detached from living in the moment. We become detached from our bodies. I think we become detached from our souls. And that is, so I think the result is the complete opposite of conscious living. Conscious living for me is being present. It's being aware of your senses, opening up your senses, but also having an expanded sense of self and being able to go beyond self, knowing you're more than the physical boundaries of your body. So I think that, you know, what happens is that when we become very detached from our bodies, when we become stuck in this trance-like state, just going from A to B. You know, you're doing activity A, you're thinking about activity B, C, and D, you're worried all the time, you're ruminating, churning things around in your head. When you become then, you know, detached from your body, you don't really know how you feel about what you're doing. You're just in this perennial state of stress and worry. And I think when that happens, many people, I think, are in their bodies, are in this state of stress. And that a prolonged state of stress ultimately results in body dysfunction and symptoms. You know, we know now through science the stress cycle. We know that because of the complex physiological process that emotion is, when that works throughout the body and brain, it affects the endocrine system, it affects the immune system, it affects the autonomic nervous system. And when they're all affected, ultimately, then the body begins to break down and symptoms appear. And those symptoms, obviously, you know, as I was saying earlier, will vary from person to person. But I think that, you know, a huge piece of the puzzle is the is being in that trance-like state, is being kind of constantly stressed and not being in the moment, not living consciously, where you're aware of, you know, I think when you're living consciously, you're in the moment, you know why you're doing what you're doing. I think so many people, and I count myself in this, and I know where, I guess I see myself as having walked a path and reflecting back, and all of my work in all of my programs and all of my therapy on top of my training are things that I've gone through myself. So I think that, you know, for me, one of the crucial aspects of conscious living is being aware of why we do what we do. Because I think so much of the time, people are just doing what they're doing because either they think they should, it's what they've always done, or they don't really know. Deep in their hearts, I think a lot of the time, people are doing things that they don't really know why they're doing it. So I think it's vital. It's certainly a thing I do with my clients is get them living consciously, get them connected to their body, connected to their soul, so they really begin to tune into the reasons that underpin why they do what they do. You know, why am I taking this action? Why am I saying this? Why am I going to this place? You know, they know that they can feel whether it's they have a pull from their heart or whether it's the conditioned mind saying, oh, you should do that, you should do that, you ought to do that, you must do that. And it's very easy, I think, in modern life, with the pace of modern life, with us being bombarded by information and data from everywhere, for us to be just in this trance and then going through, oh, I've got to do this, I must do this, I have to do this. And lives can be taken over, I think, with that being in that state. And in that state, we are just detached. We're detached from who we are. And as I say, I think that's when, you know, when illness, ill health, begins to creep in. People may start with something small, you know, maybe lacking energy or just not feeling quite right, a bit of anxiety. But what I find with health problems is they tend to develop. So, you know, I think that the body sends symptoms as a way of trying to get our attention. It's almost as if, you know, we've become detached from who we are. Our energy is out of balance. And our emotion is blocked, and our body then says, hang about, you've got to do something about this. So it's sort of tapping us on the shoulder and, you know, through the symptoms that it sends.
What it makes me think about is spending your awareness. Of course, awareness is a passive, and it leads to actually action. I guess I want to say once you change these aspects, even a few of them, a shift in consciousness occurs, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Because it all plays, as far as of my research, it all plays a part of perceptions, beliefs, assumptions, expectations, and feelings.
Yeah, I think all of those things play an enormous part. It's just, you know, an awful lot of those things are reasonably unconscious, isn't it? I think this is one of the interesting things is that, you know, I think even mainstream science suggests that something like 98 or even 99% of our behavior is unconscious. So we tend to replicate patterns over and over again. And, you know, the sort of, I guess the painful irony is that with the pace and kind of stress of modern life, when we're kept in this sort of perennial state of stress, it keeps us locked in old patterns. You know, it keeps us locked in old unconscious patterns. And again, a big chunk of my work is about trying to make the unconscious conscious. So we're looking deep inside in order to make changes on the outside. So it's, you know, raising awareness, because I think we have enormous capacity to change. I think we have enormous capacity to transform our own lives. But it's, you know, we need, in order to do that, we need to attune ourselves to our physical bodies, our emotional bodies, and our spiritual body or our soul. But I think when we do that, we begin to, you know, we make the unconscious conscious. and those, you know, the kind of, say, the expectations, the beliefs, all those things that may have been governing our behavior, we can bring those, we can shine a light on those and bring them to the forefront, and then really begin to see the impact that they're having, and whether they serve us, because ultimately that's what we want to know, is whether if we're behaving in a certain way and it's driven by a certain belief, well, is this serving us, you know, or is this working against myself? Is this not really in my highest and best interest? Is this not really in alignment with the core of who I am, my soul? So, yeah, it's a really important part to make those unconscious expectations and beliefs, make them conscious so we can change them.
Now, sometimes we have these energetic blockages. What causes these energetic blockages?
That's a good question. I would say that, just going back to what I was saying earlier, really, we have, if we think about this idea of an energy of us, you know, a soul that wants to experience itself. You know, if we think about maybe the purpose of life is to be the full, to experience ourselves in the fullest way possible. Well, as we go through life and we become conditioned, that energy becomes blocked. So the more we are, you know, and of course, a lot of that conditioning becomes unconscious. We form unconscious beliefs and then we have unconscious behavioral patterns. So the more we exhibit patterns that are a manifestation or a reflection of who we are not rather than who we are, the more we block our energy. And as I say, what happens is it gets to that critical mass point when it's almost like, you know, it creates a great deal of stress in the body to try to hold our energy in. So that's, you know, to keep that energy blocked creates a great deal of stress. So ultimately, it's the being who we are not more than being who we are. And of course, that occurs in little everyday instances of life, because, you know, life is made up of a series of moments. It's, you know, it's a class at college. It's an interaction with a colleague at work. It's a whole series of things that we are doing. So in all of these little moments, and all of these little activities that we engage in, and all of these tasks we do, and all of the people that we speak to, we have choices, we have decisions of how we behave and how we react. And if our behavior, as I say, is governed by the conditioned mind, the thinking mind, then that's detached from the energy of who we are, the core of us, then who we are gets blocked because it's not expressing itself. And I think that's the important bit. The cause of the energy blockage is the conditioned mind ruling the roost, the conditioned mind governing our behavior just in everyday little ways. And this, as I say, this usually happens because as we go through life, we become conditioned. And what we're doing is, in becoming conditioned, we're learning to cope with situations. So we go through experiences, and if it's difficult, we learn to adapt. If we're going somewhere new, if we're in a new class at college, or if we're going to a new job, and we want desperately to fit in, we may cover up who we really are. So in order to cope in that situation, we're deviating from who we are. We're blocking the energy of us. And of course, we all do that to a certain extent, and that doesn't cause any great harm when it's done every now and again. But if that becomes the pattern, if that becomes the unconscious pattern, so that the individual doesn't realize that they've not just done it in that instance, in that new class at college, they've actually begun to do that in many other areas of their life, and they don't know they're doing it. But what they're doing is they're they're behaving in this way because unconsciously they learned that it worked in one context, so the behavior is replicated throughout every area of their life. And of course what happens is that they ultimately, each time they do it, they're blocking the energy of who they are, and stress is created in the body, and ultimately that can lead to, well, you know, either symptoms, it can lead to feeling stressed, or symptoms of anything from anxiety, depression, through to the physical symptoms that we've talked about.
See, and that definitely, as I said before, all of it makes perfect sense. Now, of course, we've been talking about thoughts, and we've been talking about feelings in the heart. And sometimes what you think and feel can cause stress. Is that what you think might be causing stress as far as with my husband because of his back pain?
Well, it's really interesting, you see, because I feel that certainly when it comes to something like back pain, I believe that in the absence of structural damage to the back, I do believe that it can be the cause of the pain can be an emotional cause. And, I think what happens is that the back is a really interesting area where, there's a lot of muscles involved in that area. And when there's an emotional blockage or an emotional imbalance, what can happen is that the autonomic nervous system responds by tightening muscles, essentially. So what you can then have is that certain muscles tighten, others don't, and the back can be pulled out of alignment and certain areas can go into spasm. So I think that if it's definitely the case that your husband does not have an injury and there's no structural damage, I would be very interested to know whether there's recently been a period of time where he's felt kind of powerless. He's felt frustrated or agitated by feeling out of control. And this, I don't know whether this would be at work or even whether, you know, he's been overloaded with, you know, is he being overloaded at work or some part of his life where he's taken on more or he's been given more than actually deep down in his soul he really wants to be doing. And this is, I think, that might be something worth looking at, because it could be the emotion, the frustration that is arising. He may not be feeling that frustration, but it could be this frustration arising as a result of that, and it's manifesting as that back pain. I'd say it's definitely worth looking at that. Those would be the questions. Those would be the first questions that I'd want to ask him.
Okay. Right. It's just so much, and I guess we'd be looking for answers, and we go when we're in pain, we go to medicine quickly. If we have a headache, we take aspirin or a goody powder. And of course, if we have back pain, we take more medicine. Is there a way to wean away from that? Or is it just all part of our mind?
I think, you know, this is the thing, isn't it? We live in a culture whereby we want fairly immediate results. Unfortunately, we've become reasonably passive in relation to healthcare. So we tend to look for some, you know, external expert to provide a solution for us. So we all naturally do that. If you have a headache tablet, you know, you take a, you know, if you need to have a headache, you take a tablet. If you've got back pain, often you'll take a painkiller, an anti-inflammatory. And I would say, you know, if the problem is acute, then that's fine. I still think it's worth looking at, well, why is it there? There is a reason for this. My body is trying to communicate something to me through this symptom. I certainly think, you know, if you had back pain for a couple of days without a back injury and then it went away, then okay, you could take some ibuprofen or codeine or alternative painkiller, and you know that's probably okay. But if the problem were to become chronic, you know, I think it's that's really when you want to be looking at, addressing that question of, there is a cause for this. My body is trying to communicate to me. This is a signal that there's something that I need to address. And it means that, there's either some emotion deep down that I'm blocking, or the energy of me is being blocked. I'm not being true to myself. I'm doing what I should do. I'm taking on too much. I'm not saying no. There's something in there that needs to be addressed. And I think that's an important thing to do. And of course, it means that, of course, you then are taking control back of your health. So you can, and I feel it's a really important thing to do, to recognize that, well, in much the same way as if you're driving your car and there's a problem, a light will appear on your dashboard to get your attention. And I think this is really what, your body does with symptoms. What we don't do is stick a sticker over the light on the car dashboard so that we don't have to see it anymore. We tend to change the oil or get some more gas. Or if it's a more serious light, we can take it to the car mechanic. But I think that's, I think symptoms and emotions are there. I believe anything we feel in our body is a communication. It's a feedback mechanism that our body is using to tell us there's something not right about the way you're interacting with your environment. And obviously, I come from a particular perspective. You have people that are nutritionists that will say, well, you need to change your diet. And there's certainly value in that. Obviously, because of my perspective, I believe that the significant contributor, the significant cause of many, many health problems is one which is emotional in orientation, so a blockage of emotion, an imbalance of emotion, and that's being often coming from a detachment from the energy of who we are. I hope that's helpful.
Yes, but I guess we can't express enough the importance of getting rid of stress. But in order to get rid of stress, you got to keep your energy clean. You got to be more healthy, and that's how I see it. Cal, before we get off the air, do you have any suggestions like how to remove energetic blockages? Should people change their emotions around, change their thinking process, of course?
I think, for me, the most important thing is that, as I was saying earlier, the major chunk of emotion occurs independently of our thinking. So I feel that the most important thing for people to do is to get into their bodies, feel and accept what they feel. Be okay with what you feel. Allow yourself to feel all of the emotions you have in your body. Stay out of your head, get into your body, breathe, feel your emotions, and allow yourself to act on them. Don't deny them, don't judge them, don't place restrictions on them. Just, if something happens and your body sends you some frustration, allow yourself to feel that frustration and take some constructive action on it. Don't block it. Don't kind of try to talk it away. But don't behave in a destructive manner either. But allow yourself to recognize the emotions are feedback. The emotions are your body's way of trying to help you navigate through life. So it's your body's way of saying, I like this or I don't like this. Anger is, well, I don't like what's going on here. I want something else to happen. So you can constructively deal with that by looking at, all right, well, what would I like to happen instead? Because when I can create a change there, then my body doesn't need to send that anger to me anymore. So I feel that's the key thing. It's getting into the body. It's allowing everything you feel to be okay, because it's a reflection of who you are at any given moment in time. So I think it's vital.
Well, Cal, we're getting limited on our time. Can you give us a website that people can actually get to you if they have any more questions?
Yeah, that'd be great. You can find me on Facebook under Kyle Davies, KyleDavies. My website is kyledavies.net, kyledavies.net. And yeah, it would I'm more than happy to take questions. I'm on Twitter as well, but I probably need a more straightforward Twitter handle because there's a couple of underscores in there. But you can find me at Kyle L. Davies is my personal page, or Kyle Davies is also my business page. So it'd be good to hear from people. Hopefully that's of some use what we've talked about. It's been great being on the show. Thank you very much for having me.
Kyle, thank you. I appreciate you, and you have enlightened us with this glorious information. I hope that we can all take it to live a cleansed life and get rid of the negativity out of our minds and start getting to the spirituality of things. So thank you so much for that, Kyle.
Thanks, Technisha. It's been great.
You too, and you have a blessed one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, my guest, I appreciate you for tuning in, as I always say. And I thank you so much for hitting me up on Facebook, giving your concerns about my husband. And if you have any other concerns or questions that you want to ask, you know you can. You can go on my Facebook fan page. Hit me up on Twitter at tday60. I'm through Gmail, technishaday@gmail.com. But tomorrow, coming up, we got a smoking hot actress, model, and Playboy bunny with a very inspiring story, Abigail Rich. So she'll be giving us her lifestyle and how she survived to become all these different things. So make sure you stay tuned in tomorrow at 12 p.m. And as I always say, God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.